You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi everyone, Ricardo Gonçalves with SBS On The Money for this Wednesday, the 3rd of February 2021. It's your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap. Later, telco complaints, they are down, but what can you do if you do have an unresolved issue? But first, to the Reserve Bank, we heard from the RBA Governor, Philip Lowe. He spoke publicly for the first time this year, where he's explained why interest rates may actually stay low for longer. Here is Reserve Bank Governor Philip Lowe.
Before increasing the cash rate, the board wants to see inflation sustainably within the 2 to 3% target range. It's not enough for it to be forecast to be in that range. We want to actually see it sustainably within that range. Meeting this condition for an increase in the cash rate will require a tighter labour market and stronger wages growth than we're currently forecasting. It's difficult to determine exactly when this condition might be met. But based on the outlook I've shared with you today, we do not expect it to be before 2024, and it's possible it'll be later than this. So the message is interest rates are going to be low for quite a while yet.
Philip Lowe there, speaking at the National Press Club. So with interest rates staying low for longer, what does that mean for investments? It's one of the things I spoke with my next guest about at the same time as the day the share market rose today. The S&P ASX 200 up 0.9% at 6824. It touched an 11-month high. The banks and healthcare stocks did well today, but the miners fell. For that and more, I spoke earlier with George Baburis, the head of research at K2 Asset Management. George, the market is up today. Why?
A combination of things, a good lead by Wall Street, very supportive there, and also the RBA comments in Australia, lower rates for longer, accommodative monetary policy with more fiscal stimulus. It's just a good backdrop for risk assets going forward. It's not a smooth line, but supportive backdrop reaffirmed this morning and last night.
What exactly does low interest rates mean for assets like shares, especially when we now hear the Reserve Bank Governor say interest rates are likely to stay on hold at least until 2024?
Yeah, so low rates imply that alternative asset classes, higher risk ones like equities, become more valuable. So the dividend of, say, 3.5% or 4.5% becomes much more compelling on a relative basis relative to zero interest rates or the 1% 10-year bond yield. So the relativity is what it's all about, and it drives risk appetite. Equities buy earnings 1 year forward, and that low rate being guaranteed, in effect, is supportive of those risk asset classes, which is what low interest rates are trying to do. They're trying to stimulate people to invest into the economy, and the equity market is part of that.
Can we talk about profit reporting season? Amcor, the first to report higher profits, higher dividend, a higher full-year forecast. Is this something we're likely to see across the board?
Yeah, potentially. It's a quality business, Amcor, good defensive global quality business. And that EBIT, around about US $386 million, was a bit of an upgrade versus expectation. But it is a good sign of what the defensive names are doing globally. And the way to look at it, if you can take a step back, is that in aggregate, when you look at all the earnings, we're expecting them to grow versus last year, which is an obvious statement. But Amcor is a good lead into that sentiment for a good quality business, again, with a good quality dividend.
Amcor shares rose quite healthily today as a result. So are there opportunities for investors to get in ahead of these other announcements from other companies, or have any potential price increases already been priced in?
Yeah, a rule of thumb, markets always pricing in future earnings and they're priced efficiently until there's a surprise. So we don't know what's going to happen, of course, stock by stock. The way to look at it very quickly, if you buy bank shares, you're limiting on the growth upside, but you're getting a good yield. But if you're out there looking for leverage to the economic recovery because of the low interest rates and the additional fiscal stimulus coming from governments, the leverage tends to come from that small cap or the micro cap sector. That means leverage higher risk. So a lot of people will be looking at how the small cap sector in Australia is benefiting across different segments. And looking at the leisure industry, travel industry as it opens up, there's opportunities there but much more risk versus consumer staples. So that's a rule of thumb. So leverage is where people are looking for opportunity, and small cap is one of those for calendar 21.
Speaking of those companies that that I guess used to be a small cap, Afterpay, which is now one of our largest companies, right? The UK looks to be cracking down on the buy now, pay later sector. Given Afterpay's stunning rally, for example, what's your take on these types of stocks?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Obviously, Afterpay started as a microcap stock called TouchCorp, and it's obviously gone from just under $1 to $150. It's the first microcap stock in Australia to get into the top 20 without delivering a profit. The thing is, for the buy now, pay later, it's here to stay. It's going to evolve, and the rest of the world's going to adopt it. But the rule of thumb, very quickly, is that when regulation comes in and they treat it like a bank-like business, regulatory capital costs go up, and that will weigh on future earnings. So it's joining the majors. It's grown so extraordinarily strong in the past year and the past 4 years, but more regulatory capital, higher costs, and it evens it up a little bit compared to regular payment systems, the banking sector, Visa, MasterCard, for example.
Very quickly, I want to get your thoughts on small players taking on the big end of town, right? Because just as fast as shares in GameStop surged last week, and the shorters were targeted, the stock fell just as hard and collapsed around 60% overnight. So what's your warning to investors, if there is such a warning?
Yeah, my warning to investors, don't have unrealistic expectations of double-digit growth, straight away. It's a risky asset class. But the good thing about what's happening about this democratisation in the option market and in the retail investors is that these 18 to 23-year-olds, we'll oversimplify, are learning about risk, option strategies, shorting and squeezing some traditional hedge funds. And they're good things to learn because you need to manage your life cycle savings going through your life cycle. So that's the positive I can take out of it. So there's nothing negative of it. Obviously, a lot of people made money. Some people have lost money. But that'd be my take on it, is that don't expect unrealistic expectations. Diversify, of course. But specifically with this retail sort of trend at the moment, at least they're learning something about risk going forward and how to price it. That's a good thing.
George Baburis there from K2 Asset Management. And it seems we may be happier with our telephone and broadband service providers, because the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman says between October and December last year, there was an 11.2% fall in complaints compared with the previous quarter, but there is more work to do. For more on that, I spoke earlier with the Ombudsman, Judy Jones. Judy, how would you describe the level of complaints made to you, and why do you think that is?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think compared to the previous quarter, we've seen complaints come down in this quarter, the October to December quarter, so an 11% decrease. But over the course of the last 6 months, so that July to December half year, they did rise slightly. We think that the fall in that final quarter of the year is a good sign. We often get complaints falling in that quarter because of the summer and the shorter period in December. So with all that happened in 2020, we think that that's a really good result.
Of the complaints that you did get, what were they mostly about?
Well, the most common complaint about issue is no or delayed action by the telco, which is kind of those customer service complaints. Then it's service and equipment fees, and then it gets into the service itself. So perhaps having no service at all, or a delay in establishing the service. And that was consistent across residential consumers and small businesses. One of the really good things we did see in this quarter was a 40% decrease in complaints about consumers being unable to contact their provider. You might remember that during the pandemic, that was a real issue for providers with offshore call centres and things, and pressure on the systems here as well. So we're really pleased to see that fall off, although there are still some providers that consumers are finding hard to contact, so still work to do.
And with those people with complaints, how do they go about getting them rectified?
Well, the first thing to do is to contact your provider in the first instance. That's the easiest way to get a complaint resolved. But if you can't resolve it with your provider, jump online or give us a call. We then document the complaint and escalate it within the provider. And about 80 to 90% of complaints are resolved in that process. If they can't resolve it that way, then consumers can come back to us, and we get much more heavily involved in looking into what's happened and trying to find a resolution with the parties.
Judy Jones there, the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman. That is SBS On The Money. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Business Ricardo.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. Content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.